from the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, a biblical look at healing the country and one man's take on the gathering storm for the church. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and homeschool dad. In the wake of the horrible and tragic death of George Floyd, protesters have filled the streets of many cities in America. Social media feeds have devolved into a cesspool of accusations and guilt. How can Christians engage in a way that brings about healing and forgiveness? On Monday of this week, Tony Perkins shared his thoughts on the restoration that this country needs.
I want to address the escalating violence and destruction that is enveloping our cities. Now, police brutality and mob violence spring from the same fountain. The disturbing video of a veteran police officer kneeling on the neck of a subdued subject, and thereafter the spreading wave of violence and looting in the name of George Floyd, are painful. Yet these things are not surprising. Having served as a police officer, I would say that if the department approved of that tactic of kneeling on the neck of a man who was handcuffed and on the ground, there are bigger problems in Minneapolis than Derek Chauvin. The failure of the other officers to intervene would suggest to me that this type of brutality is pervasive. Now, that's not to say that all the police officers in Minneapolis are bad. I'm sure that the vast majority are there to protect and to serve. The evidence, though, would suggest Minneapolis has an administration that tolerates the abuse of power. And the abuse of power, disregard for human life, and the wanton destruction and uncontrolled rage we are witnessing in cities across the country all flow from a society that is rapidly losing a sense of right and wrong, of transcendent truth. This truth deficit means justice will not be equal, because it is determined by the position you hold or the zip code in which you reside. This loss of a moral consensus is not a new development. What's happened is that it has reached a crisis point in America. The foundation of America's shared morality has been under steady assault for over a half century. Leftists will convulse with disdain and rage at this assertion, but let the mockers mock. For over 50 years, we've systematically removed God from public life, the belief that He holds all people accountable for their actions and that He has the authority to do so because He is the Creator. He made us and the laws that govern creation. He gave us those laws not to crush our freedom, but to place it within wise boundaries. Freedom does not mean the right to do whatever one wants. It means we have the power to choose a good path, one with guide rails that lead and protect us. When we tear those guide rails down, chaos ensues, the kind of chaos we're now seeing. As I walked into the building last night where we reside, the rioters were in the streets. As legitimate protest turns not only to the destruction of businesses and other private property, but to the endangerment of human life itself and the wounding of our nation's soul. How have we come to a place where human lives are treated with the kind of contempt we saw when a man crying, "I can't breathe," was held down for 8 minutes until he died? Or when the potential for violence outside the White House became so great that the President of the United States was taken by the Secret Service to a protected location? Could there be a connection between the banishment of God, along with His truth from our schools and the broader culture, and the steady devaluing of human life? In the march to push God from our corporate conscience, we've left behind the understanding that life has value, not because of what it produces or where it resides, but because of in whose image it was created. Only if we recognize the reality of a God who is present in human experience and calls us not only to standards of behavior, but of heart attitudes and convictions, can we keep from descending into armed enclaves of resentment and fear. Yet we now mock the idea that a personal creator is the author of not only of our rights, but our essential dignity, turning the core beliefs of our founders on their heads. Instead of self-evident truths, we now claim there is no truth except whatever is desired by each individual according to his or her preferences. Preferences, by the way, that can be changed moment by moment. As a result, episodes of police brutality and burning of cities should not come as a surprise. When you sow the wind, you reap the whirlwind. As C.S. Lewis wrote, quote, "We make men without chest and expect from them virtue and enterprise. We laugh at honor and we're shocked to find traitors in our midst," end quote. If there is an upside to any of this, it might be that in the quiet of our hearts, we will see that our cultural bankruptcy must be replaced by the richness of the goodness, truth, and beauty of the God who offers life and hope. It is my prayer that during this time of growing crisis in health, safety, racial discord, and social erosion, millions of Americans will turn to the one who alone can bring the healing America urgently needs.
To keep up with the latest from Tony and the entire FRC team, I'd encourage you to follow us on Facebook. You can also follow Tony on Twitter. Just search for @TPerkins. Also, look for a link to Tony's daily email update when you visit TonyPerkins.com. And we'd encourage you to support our ongoing efforts with a financial gift when you visit TonyPerkins.com. That's TonyPerkins.com.
What are you reading this season? Looking for timely and original commentary on human dignity, marriage, and religious liberty? We've got you covered at FRCblog.com. The content on our blog is written by policy experts, FRC staff, and outside contributors. Read about a range of topics from world abortion leaders exploit pandemic to advance self-managed abortions, and online outreach, how to continue fulfilling the Great Commission during the coronavirus. Stand for truth and stay informed at FRCblog.com.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. On Tuesday of this week, Tony Perkins invited Bishop Vincent Matthews Jr., World Missions President for the Church of God in Christ, to join him in discussing how to bring about the healing that is so urgently needed in our nation. Here's FRC President Tony Perkins on Tuesday's edition of Washington Watch Live.
About this time yesterday, President Trump addressed the crisis that has enveloped our nation from the Rose Garden before walking across the street to the St. John's Church. It's located across the street from the White House. This is what he had to say.
All Americans were rightly sickened and revolted by the brutal death of George Floyd. My administration is fully committed that for George and his family, justice will be served. He will not have died in vain, but we cannot allow the righteous cries and peaceful protesters to be drowned out by an angry mob. The biggest victims of the rioting are peace-loving citizens in our poorest communities, and as their president, I will fight to keep them safe. I will fight to protect you. I am your president of law and order, and an ally of all peaceful protesters.
Joining me now to talk more about this, Bishop Vincent Matthews Jr., International Missions President for COGIC, the largest African-American Pentecostal denomination. He's also pastor of Tabernacle Church in New Haven. He's joining us now. Pastor Vincent, thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, Tony. It's an honor and a pleasure to be with you. Thank you so much.
I don't know why I was thinking Mississippi. I apologize
yes.
for that.
You're correct.
South. Oh, okay. My notes said somebody. I had Connecticut. I apologize. Well, good. You're a neighbor.
No problem.
You're a neighbor there
in
Mississippi.
We're right at Memphis.
Well, let me ask you this, because the president addressed this in his comments. I wrote a piece that was published today about this, where I think the lawlessness that is being displayed in our streets is the same lawlessness that led to the death of George Floyd. It's a rejection of truth and the law, and that puts our entire nation at risk.
I agree with that. I think that, first of all, the indefensible, reprehensible events of The killing of George Floyd is just appalling all around the world, and it is rooted in sin. And those who seek to peacefully protest, we had pastors who peacefully protest, and then anarchists came out of nowhere smashing and doing all types of things. It is also rooted in sin, as well as a rejection of truth. I agree with you on that. We have a huge problem, not only in America, but around the world, but more specifically right here in the United States.
So, Bishop, what is the way forward? I mean, we seem to find ourselves back at this same position time and time again.
Yeah, you're right. And I think the reason that we're back at this same position is, for many people, is incomprehensible, the depth of man's inhumanity demand that we're witnessing. And thanks to smartphones, it's being recorded, unfortunately. I think the problem is that for many, it's no surprise. It's a hurtful thing, but it's no surprise. And we need to, as a church, not black church, white church, no, as God's church, recognize, just as John the Baptist did at the opening of the New Testament, at the last Old Testament prophet, not only preaching the kingdom, but preaching truth to power and shifting those who are in systems. He talked to the tax collectors and the soldiers and told them that justice must be important. And I think that's important for all Christians to speak out for those who are disenfranchised and who have challenges in our society.
I mean, these issues are real. Clearly, there are those that want to exploit them and take advantage of them, but that cannot lead us to ignore the underlying issues that we have yet to address as a nation. And I want to bring it back to what you just said. I think the church has to be at the tip of the spear and addressing it, because the only thing I believe that can bring people together in a genuine, abiding fashion, I'm not talking about a tolerance. We got to go beyond tolerance. We have to go to what's called love. And that happens, I believe, the only true way that can happen is when we're in the bond of Christ.
My brother, Tony, my brother, you are absolutely hitting the nail on the head. The love of Christ binds us through koinonia, a fellowship with one another. And that koinonia means that we have something in common. It's not our skin color. That's superficial. It's not our ethnicity. It is the love of Christ that binds us together. And when that love is shared with others, they will know that we're his disciples by our love for one another, how we love others. The love of Christ, the agape love that we share with others, will impact our society. And we look beyond the demonic designations given through what we have learned. I read your article, and over not only the past 50 years, what has been taught going all the way back to social Darwinism, separating races and things of that sort, have come to a conclusion right here, what we see happening in our society.
Yeah, this didn't happen overnight. It was,
yes, sir.
It's been decades, century in the making. I agree with you. I think it does go back to the teaching of Darwin and the survival of the fittest, and that we are all here just by chance, not by the hand of a creative God who loves us and sent his son to redeem us. That changes the whole dynamic of a society. How do we get back to where we need to be?
Well, we need to really seek and share with the world the true gospel. And that's why I mentioned John the Baptist, the gospel that John preached, the gospel that Jesus preached, the gospel when Jesus in Matthew 9 looked at Jerusalem and saw the people as sheep without a shepherd. When we see that there are disenfranchised, marginalized individuals in our society, not to just say, hey, these people must pull themselves up by the bootstrap, but to say that Jesus is the answer, that he can strengthen you. He is the one who empowers you. And we share that gospel and go and let them know that the theocratic rule of God, the kingdom of heaven, is at hand, and that they can be free, whether you're black, white, Latino, Asian, or First Nation. We must share the gospel.
Bishop Matthews, I spend my time, you know, looking at the survey data, looking at, you know, polling. It's a part of what I do in terms of not how we make decisions, but it's just trying to figure out where people are. And what I see time and time again, it just like what's happening on this conversation here today, you and I, because of our relationship with Jesus Christ, I would venture, and I was thinking about this as I was preparing for this interview with you, I bet we agree on probably 90 to 95%, maybe more, of the issues that we deal with.
That's right.
But you wouldn't know that by how the media would describe white evangelicals and black evangelicals.
Yeah. And that's why we must not allow the narrative to be defined by the world. The world cannot define the narrative because we have, of course, really, there's 7.5 billion people in the world, 7,500 languages in the world. But there are only two cultures in this world. There's the culture of Christ and the culture of Satan. And you're right. We may not share the same DNA, but we share the same father. And we share the same values, and those are biblical values, and we must not be informed and influenced by the systems or the doctrines of demons, if you will allow me to say that. No, that's the truth. But we must find that bond together, regardless of what the differences that the world say, and move forward and glorify God. We must. You're absolutely right.
And I know from the data that that is a fact, that
yes.
Black evangelicals, white evangelicals agree on almost everything. They stand out because they have a biblically centric view of the world. Now, the problem, I think, the challenge is, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the media is intentionally trying to keep those two groups separate.
Well, the media is keeping us separate, but then also I think we must be intentional about breaking those barriers, just as I'm on your show with you now. We must be intentional, not just swapping pulpits, but really seeking to see what we can do on the ground, in our cities, and in the areas where we are to serve humanity and demonstrate. Remember that scripture. Yeah. They would know that we're disciples by our love for one another. We, as we demonstrate that love, the same love that was cross-cultural on the day of Pentecost, those who sent out Paul and Barnabas in Antioch, when we see that it transcends, when the world sees that you and I can not only get along but work together and break down the walls of denomination and ethnicity, then we defy what is being portrayed in the media and outside.
And I think that is essential to the preservation of this republic.
Yes.
Without it, I don't think our nation has a future. I mean, I think we can patch it together. We can keep limping along. And I'm not saying that everybody in America has got to be a believer and is going to be a believer, but what I'm saying is that if the church will model it, as you just said, it can bring the healing and the way forward for a nation.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're right. And as we do that, I mean, we will be able to help others to be free and to enjoy the peace of God, which passes all understanding, in spite of the differences. You think of Tony, and you know better than I. You look at somewhere like Somalia, where they're fighting and have been in anarchy for a long time. All of those people are related. They're the same ethnicity, different clans. We will always find a difference. We will always find something that divides us.
Good point.
It is the bond of Christ that will unite us in spite of whatever outside differences that we may have.
It is way past time that that message becomes a consistent message of the church, not just from the pulpits, but in practice from the pews and every place that we live. Bishop, as always, great to have you on the program. Thank you for coming on the program. Thank you for declaring truth to the nation.
Thank you, Tony, for demonstrating that love. And as we work together prayerfully, our conversation has blessed someone. It's an honor, as always, to be with you. Thank you so much.
You can find out more about Bishop Matthews when you visit tonyperkins.com. We'd also encourage you to help FRC continue to produce this radio program with a financial gift when you visit tonyperkins.com and click on the donate link at the bottom of the page. That's tonyperkins.com.
Are you looking to grow closer in your relationship with Jesus Christ and in your knowledge of God's Word? Family Research Council has a new three-part series titled Three Ways to Read the Bible. In this blog series, FRC's Director of Life, Culture, and Women's Advocacy, Petrina Mosley, shares helpful ways to be encouraged and guided by Scripture. There's no better time than now to get to know God through His Word and learning what He says about humanity and life itself. To learn more, visit frcblog.com.
We all can benefit from a good lecture. They can inform you and grow you. Well, Family Research Council's new weekly podcast features lectures by top thinkers from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast addresses issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. On Wednesday's program, Tony got to talk with Dr. Albert Mohler about his new book, The Gathering Storm, which is especially appropriate for the times we're living in this year. Dr. Mohler is the president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky.
Dr. Mohler, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's always good to be with you. Thank you.
So, good title for this week.
Well, you know, it's ominous. I borrowed that title and acknowledged it from Winston Churchill's first volume of his great history, The Second World War. And the whole point of Churchill's first volume was why all the intellectually aristocratic, sophisticated people in Europe would not see reality as the storm clouds were gathering in the 1930s. And I'm not saying this is the 1930s, but I am saying this is 2020, and there are huge storm clouds on our horizon. But to make your point, I wrote this book before any of us had heard of COVID-19, and before we knew what was going to be happening on the streets of America at this time. But we can surely see the storm.
Well, I haven't read the whole book. I did read the introduction to the book, and I'm actually putting it in my briefcase so that I can read the rest of the book. But I think it's very appropriate to borrow from Winston Churchill because, you know, he was basically, as you point out, in the wilderness in the 1930s. Nobody wanted to believe the warnings that he was giving to them. They would rather that the whole Nazi threat go away. But the reality is that was systematically building, and the threat was there. And I think from our standpoint, from our culture, you know, the foundation of Western civilization, which is Christianity, has been under assault for over a century. I actually think what we're seeing on the streets of America is the byproduct of that.
Well, you know, the entire civilizational order of that makes America possible, for example, an experiment in ordered self-liberty, requires preconditions like stability, trust, respect, and human dignity. And one of the saddest things to me, Tony, is that I see so many people right now who are making claims about human dignity, but they have no way of defining it. I mean, we as Christians, based on a biblical worldview, who understand that human dignity, all humans have dignity precisely because we are made by a creator who endowed us with that dignity and made us in his image. I think we're seeing the failure of secular attempts, liberal, progressive, secular attempts to try to define human rights and human dignity apart from that biblical worldview.
And that is the threat. The secularism that has been building for years, and the warning has gone out. But where is the church in all of this?
Well, I think the church, and this is part of the reason I wrote this book, the church is largely unaware of the scale of the challenge we face. And even conservative Christians will say, well, you know, I look at this checklist of issues, and by the way, every one of them is real. The problem is they're all connected, and there's a far deeper problem, and that is that millions and millions of Americans who don't even recognize it are basically walking, talking, voting, sleeping secularists. They don't even know that. It's unlike Europe, where they kind of know they're secularists. Here in the United States, they've been secularized when they didn't even know it.
What has been the major force of that secularization that's taken place?
You know, I would have to say institutionally is higher education and the power that the intellectual elites have had in this society filters through Hollywood, government, the media. It's all part of one very clubby, you know, let's put it this way. Thomas Dye says we're in a nation in which you've got several thousand people who make all the policies and decisions for 330 million people. And they basically all go to the same clubs, go to the same schools, and eat at the same restaurants, and well, they vote the same way too, and that has effects.
So, Dr. Mohler, your motivation for writing this book—I mean, I know you're a busy guy. You're running a seminary. You have a regular podcast. But I know you're a prolific writer, but what was the motivation for this book?
Well, Tony, I appreciate that. I just think that many churches, pastors, and Christians fail to understand that basic worldview conflict that's behind all of this, that shows up in every headline, that that is in every contested issue in our society. And I think we're in danger of losing our own children, and have been for a long time. And so I just wanted to help Christians connect the dots and hopefully be more faithful. Christian pastors preach more faithfully. Christians live more faithfully, raise our children more faithfully. And, you know, hand in hand with others who share this concern, I'm hoping that we can awaken the church to the danger.
So for those that would get a copy of your book, and I'm sure that they can get it at any bookstore that's not boarded up in a major city, or they can get it online, The Gathering Storm, Secularism, Culture, and the Church. After they finish reading the book, what would be your goal? What would you like to see happen after they've been informed by reading this insightful book?
Well, thank you, Tony. That's one of the best questions I've ever been asked. You know, I think I would say I want them to be able to look at the world and be more faithful as Christians, holding to the gospel of Jesus Christ, committed to the totality of biblical truth, and raising their children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And look, I wrote this book partly in timing for it to come out months before the 2020 election so that people can understand that elections have consequences, and elections are contests of rival worldviews. And so I had hoped to help American Christians understand that in very tumultuous times.
Well, folks, sounds like me. It is a book worth reading. I am going to be reading it. As I said, I've started it, but I'm going to finish it. Dr. Moeller, thanks so much for joining us to talk about it. And we look forward to having you back on the program again soon.
Good as always to be with you, Tony. God bless you.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. And remember, you can find out more about all of our guests at tonyperkins.com. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us. And I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.